It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. Every year, it seems, lawmakers introduce proposals to eliminate property taxes and replace them with higher sales and income taxes. None of the proposals have passed into law, but this year may bring a different story with legislation currently proposed in Harrisburg. State Representative Jim Cox, a Republican from Berks County, has unveiled House Bill 76 to eliminate school property taxes. Under the proposal, the personal income tax would increase by 1.27% to 4.34%. The sales tax would be raised to 7% from 6% and would be charged on more goods and services. But can the proposal gain traction, and will it have a better chance of survival than any of its predecessors? I'm joined now by phone by State Representative Jim Cox. Representative Cox, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Good afternoon. Thanks for having me on today.
If you have a comment or question for our guest, you can call us at 412-246-2002. That's 412-246-2002. Our email address is esspgh@wesa.fm, and you can reach us on Twitter at esspgh and follow the conversation at hashtag EPLive. Again, the phone number, 412-246-2002. Representative Cox, I mentioned that every year, it seems, lawmakers introduce proposals to eliminate property taxes and replace them with higher sales and income taxes. Nothing ever sticks, at least until now. What makes you think that it will happen this year?
Well, I don't have a crystal ball, and I can't tell you for certain that it will happen. But in our view, things have never looked better as far as our public support, and actually as far as our support within the House and Senate as well. When you take a look at previous versions of the bill, Representative Sam Rohr did a lot of work on this issue during his time in the House, and he really put together a package of bills that would work. When I became the prime sponsor of this after Representative Rohr left the House, we rolled it into one piece of legislation. We peeled back a lot of the things that were in the other legislation that confused people or that people didn't like. And so I spent a full year working with the taxpayer groups to develop legislation that they could support, and then also working with House members as far as figuring out what they had, problems they had with previous legislation, concerns they had that they didn't feel were addressed. So I did everything I could to create a product that would allow people to really get behind it. And because of that type of effort, we had 70 co-sponsors last session in the House. This session, we've had the bill introduced here for 3 or 4 months, and we already have 91 co-sponsors. That's only 11 members away from actually having enough to pass the bill. So 91 is a significant number as far as co-sponsors. Senator Dave Argall introduced Senate Bill 1400 last session, which was this same legislation. He had 13 co-sponsors. This session over in the Senate, he has 22 co-sponsors. They only need 26 to get a bill passed. So in both chambers, we've got a lot of momentum on this, and it's showing in the form of those co-sponsorships.
What have you, when you talk about taking out some of the things that may have prevented this from getting passed in the past, things that people didn't like. What were things that you saw and eliminated in this proposed legislation that might make it easier to pass and make it more appealing to people on both sides of the political aisle?
Sure. A couple examples are this. One of them was there was a pretty comprehensive change in accountability structure. There was a full system in there to use a technology called data-driven decision-making, and while there was some merit to it, there were some concerns expressed in its implementation, its cost, its fairness, and so forth. So that was one thing I heard about continually in the early stages of speaking with other members about this. One of the other things that was pretty popular for me to hear was, you know, one of the things I don't like in this legislation is they'd say, we don't like the fact that we are having to pay for other school districts' debt. My school districts have been very responsible, and so we don't feel that we should acquire the debt of all of these other school districts and have to pay that off as part of a higher sales tax and a higher income tax. So that's the genesis of why we have the legislation where it stands now, which allows school districts to continue to utilize the property tax for the duration of the payment of their debt service. For instance, their debt service is equivalent to us paying a mortgage on our home. They pay their debt service. It's the payment required on that loan that they have for a project that they've already got in progress. So they can retain some school property taxes only for the life of that loan. Once that particular debt is paid off, they no longer have the authority to utilize the school property tax, and they would have to look to the other mechanisms that we've put in place.
Now, your proposal does have its critics, and they say that the School Property Tax Elimination Act would unfairly shift the cost of public education from property owners and businesses to individuals and small businesses. What about these concerns?
Well, individuals and small businesses right now, if the truth be told, many of them are already property owners, and so they're paying school property taxes anyway. Specifically, you look at a homeowner, they're paying school property taxes, and we've got numerous seniors around the state contact their reps and senators. I hear consistently they say either they never had any children or their children have been grown and gone, and they're still paying property taxes for a school system that they're personally not benefiting from. So they're looking at that and saying, you know, there's got to be a better way to do it. When it comes to whether it's small businesses or individual, there's a trade-off here. If you look at a statewide average of property taxes, we could probably land somewhere around $2,500. There's going to be quite a few that are a lot higher than that and several below. But let's say we took $2,500 or $3,000. You have an amount like that. That amount that you're paying out, let's say $3,000, that goes away. You have to pay a higher income tax and a higher sales tax. Let's say you make $100,000 a year, or the household makes $100,000 a year. By increasing the personal income tax just over 1%, we're increasing it 1.27 over the existing amount. So on a $100,000, they'd be paying another $1,200. So we've got a $3,000 tax bill that's disappearing. $1,200 of that is replaced by a higher income tax. They're still at that point about $1,800 on the high side. Now, again, in sales tax going up by 1%, even if they use all $100,000 of their income and purchase consumable goods that are taxable, and keep in mind, food and clothing, the core food and the core clothing costs are still exempt under this legislation, even if they spend $100,000 on sales taxable items, they're only going to spend another $1,000 with that higher 1%. As you know, they're not going to spend the entire level of their income on consumable goods and services. But I use that for an example to say, even if that's the scenario, they lost $3,000 in property taxes. They're no longer paying $1,200 more in income tax, another $1,000 in sales tax. They're still $800 on the high side. So it's pretty easy for most businesses and individuals alike to see that they're going to come out. It's going to be to their advantage to see property taxes eliminated and shift over to something like this that gives them some level of control. And that's what people really like about this. They know that they have no control over how and when the property taxes go up. They can voice their concerns to school boards. School boards either feel their hands are tied and have to increase taxes, or they ignore them. And we've seen both scenarios around the Commonwealth. But when you have individuals saying, you know what, I can control my spending on the consumable side of things, and if I can't afford the extra 1% the sales tax on that particular item, I can shop around for a better price.
You're saying people have a little more there's a little more flexibility, and people can make their own decisions.
Absolutely.
Well, okay, and that's certainly a good point. And there's also the argument that local property tax revenue provides better stability than sales or income taxes, which can fluctuate with the economy. So are you at all concerned that the economy is still a bit rickety for what you're proposing here?
I've actually looked at property taxes, and in its comparison to other things such as the sales tax and the income tax, and when you look at fairly recent numbers, and I'm going to pull this out, over time, the sales tax and the income tax have gone up. In 1988, the sales tax was collecting, we were bringing about $4 billion in at that point. In 1988-89, that fiscal year, we brought in $3.1 billion in the personal income tax. Fast forward that to 2011, when we pulled in $8.7 billion on the sales tax and $10.8 on the personal income tax. So on the sales tax, we've gone from $4 to $8.7 billion. On the personal income tax, we've brought in from going from 3.1 up to $10.8 billion. And the reason for that is simple. Most people, if you were to go get a job now doing something identical to a job in 1988, chances are you're going to make more. A combination of things like minimum wage increasing, the cost of living, people just can't work for the $5 an hour that they used to work for in 1988. So the income levels have gone up over time.
Well, on paper they have, but I mean, in terms of the value, when you look at the at the increased cost of living, by some estimates, we're not really wages are not keeping up with that, particularly hourly wages.
Well, the actual wages, that's a different debate for a different day as far as whether people are getting value for their dollars. I agree with you that money does not go as far, but when we're looking at the revenue side of things. I gave you those numbers to show you that the levels of the sales tax have gone up consistently. We saw a little bit of a dip in 2008 and 2009. We got back on track in 2010 in both the sales tax and the income tax. They both saw dips, but every other year for those last 20 years, there was an increase in both of the revenue levels for those taxes. What that tells me is it is a very stable tax. When you look at the 2007, 8, 9, 10, and 11 numbers for property taxes, those numbers have actually fallen off in the last 5 years, due in part to foreclosures on homes, means nobody's paying property taxes on that home. People who are unable to pay their property taxes because they're paying their mortgage and it's come down to a choice, so it's either stay current with the bank or stay current with your property taxes. So we've seen property taxes fall off. The third element we've seen is because of the falling value of real estate over these last 5 years, people have gone in for reassessments and they've appealed their assessment levels, sometimes to significant effects. I have a local school district here in Berks County. They had close to $1 million change in their assessment values because a couple of businesses appealed their property taxes. We see $10 million and $12 million changes in property tax assessments in other parts of the Commonwealth when a pharmaceutical company, for instance, challenges their assessment level. So when you look at the last 20 years and the consistency, sales tax and income tax actually has a more consistent track record than the property taxes as a source of revenue. And even if you look and say, okay, we've seen consistently increasing property values and therefore consistently increasing property tax revenues, when there is a downturn like we saw in 8, 9, and then in 9, 10, income tax and sales tax bounced right back to as if they never lost a beat. When you look at property taxes, they still haven't fully recovered, and the collections are still down from what they were 4 years ago.
And you're certainly laying out some good figures and an interesting argument here for adopting this legislation. But there are concerns that people have that some of this may not add up, or at least that there's a risk that we could see as a result of your tax reform Some are estimating that we could see a $1.5 billion shortfall. So if that happens, how would you deal with it?
Well, I'm confident that won't happen, and here's why. The Department of Revenue provided me with an analysis. It was actually requested by the chairman and the co-chairman of the House Finance Committee, along with, I believe, some of the Senate Finance Committee members or chairman. And the report that came back to us shows us that the total amount of revenue brought in for 2014-15, which would be the first fiscal year, the total amount of revenue brought in would be 14.293. So roughly $14.3 billion would need to be raised. Now, they've pointed out that there is about a $1.4 billion shortfall to the general fund. And that's because of some drafting mistakes that were made by our Legislative Reference Bureau and some other corrections that need to be made. We're confident we can make those changes. So if you take the 14.3, subtract out the 1.4, we still end up with $12.8 billion in 2014-2015. We are only replacing about $10.8 billion in school property taxes. So what that tells me is that we are actually, even at the end of the day when all is said and done and we take care of any shortfalls that are mentioned, we're still about $2 billion overfunded in this, which tells me I can lower my income tax rate to make this revenue neutral. I've never been more confident than I am now that the numbers add up based on the study that was provided to me by the Department of Revenue. Estimates going forward, we're fine all the way across the board.
Let me jump in here, Representative Cox. We're talking with Representative Jim Cox, a Republican from Berks County, about his proposal to eliminate property taxes and replace them with higher sales and income taxes. We have a caller on the line, Berta from O'Hara Township. Berta, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
I just wanted to say, I said, listen, that people don't use the schools, okay, but if they don't pay taxes, their property goes down. If they don't support the schools, their property goes down. So it's worth it to pay the property taxes for the school because you're supporting your property. You're not just supporting the school.
You're saying if you don't pay the property taxes, your own property values go down.
Yes, of
course. All right.
Course.
Okay, well, then, and what about what Berta is saying, Representative Cox?
Well, what we've seen in around the Commonwealth is I've heard from person after person who says, look, I would love to improve my property. I'd love to put a deck on or put an addition on. I've got the space to do it, but I don't dare go through the permitting process and get those permits and trigger an assessment appeal by the township or by the school district because I've made an improvement on my home. So I think the reverse would actually happen. People right now, they have ownership, they have pride in ownership of their homes, but a lot of people are hesitant to make those changes, put any amount of money into their home, because they're afraid of getting their property taxes increased drastically by simply putting an addition on a home, especially on a home that hasn't been assessed since 1993, as we have as a case here in Berks County. You take a 1993 home, its property value, its assessment level, if you will, could go up $15,000-$20,000 just by having it reassessed when you go and do something as simple as putting a deck on. So that's really got people hesitant to improve their properties. I would argue that we'd actually probably see people putting more money into their homes and making more improvements to their homes. Paying property taxes isn't part of the value of your home. It's part of the value to the community, and that's why we're not getting rid of all the property taxes. County and municipal taxes will still be in place, so you'll be paying for those local services that you receive from your township. The school district funding would come from the state, and you've got people in your school district that would be paying higher income and higher sales taxes that would be less direct than the school property tax.
We've been talking with State Representative Jim Cox of Berks County about his proposal to eliminate property taxes and replace them with higher sales and income taxes. That is House Bill 76, and it will certainly come under consideration this fall. Representative Cox, thank you so much for being with us here on Essential Pittsburgh.
Absolutely. Glad to join anytime.
And continuing with our discussion of the idea of eliminating property taxes, replacing them with higher sales and income taxes to support schools, we welcome in Matthew Niddle. He is director of the Independent Fiscal Office. He's been listening to our conversation with Representative Jim Cox. Matthew Niddle, good to have you with us.
Hi, Paul. It's a pleasure to be with you today.
So let's look at some of what parse through some of what the state representative outlined in his proposal. How long have you looked at the Property Tax Independence Act, Matthew?
Well, this will be the second year that we're analyzing it. Last year, we analyzed a proposal, House Bill 1776. And this year, we're reexamining the proposal, had a few changes in it. That would be House Bill 76.
And so have other states done this?
There was another state, I refer to the state of Michigan, back in 1994, that largely replaced their local school operating taxes with a higher sales tax. In their case, they raised the sales tax from 4 percentage points to 6.
So one of the things that comes to mind as a question in all of this is that when you have a statewide proposal like this, it impacts different regions in different ways, one would think. So if that is the case, then talk about how this impact differs from one part of the state to another and whether this blanket approach can work. Is it feasible?
Well, from a purely revenue standpoint, whether the numbers add up, that is, it is feasible. One could adjust the personal income tax rate or the sales tax rate to offset the reduction in property taxes. So certainly that is possible. But as you note, the impact will differ across the state. And anytime you have a tax change of this magnitude, there are going to be winners and losers. That's it's unavoidable.
So if there's an area then that maybe needs to make up some money, let's say that you get away from property tax, you go to sales and revenue, and there is a shortfall, then how would an area make up that money? Or how would the state, in fact, if there was a statewide shortfall?
Yeah, and as Representative Cox noted, the way the sponsors did it is they turned to the personal income tax. In the previous version of this proposal, the personal income tax was going to go up to 4.01%. And at that time, my office did an analysis, and we found there was a shortfall of about $1.5 billion to $2 billion. The sponsors went back, and in order to fill that shortfall, they raised the personal income tax rate to 4.34%. So basically, if there is a shortfall, one of your two main tax sources, either the sales tax or the personal income tax, one would increase the rate to make up for the shortfall.
But we do know that it impacts different regions in different ways. So going forward, how do you see this? If this legislation is adopted, if it passes in the fall, how do you see it playing out? Do you see it as something that will be feasible, that will work for the state?
Again, from a revenue perspective, it can be made to work. I suspect there will be some implementation issues, you know, some technical issues that will have to be addressed going forward. And I do think there will be different effects across the states. Generally, the individuals who will benefit will be homeowners. In particular, elderly homeowners will tend to benefit because they will not have to pay the higher personal income tax rate on their Social Security income or their pension income, whereas if you had an area that had a lot of renters in it, in particular working renters, they will be somewhat worse off.
Matthew Niddle is director of the Independent Fiscal Office. Matthew, thanks so much for taking the time to join us on Essential Pittsburgh.
My pleasure, Paul. Thank you.
Coming up, the educational benefits of the music that makes your kids move. It's Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA.